That means they're going to move on. Action item 8.3. Discussion and action to adopt ordinance number 2015-179, amending city code section 2-82, norms of operation. Mr. Walker again.
Thank you, sir. I wanted to put this on here. And for several reasons, I had looked at it a couple of different ways, and one that looked at, you know, receiving or sending. And, I would like to be able to receive something that, if it was an emergency from home or something like that, I'd like to be able to receive something. So I pulled receiving off and left it as just sending. And common sense would tell me that if I accept this position up here on council to be a city councilman, that I would need to give my undivided attention to it, and not be texting while I'm supposed to be listening and paying attention. I think it could be interpreted several different ways. If we need to change the wording of it, then I'm okay with that as well. But I just believe that while sitting here doing what you're supposed to be doing for the city, you don't need to be doing texting. You know, in schools it's frowned on, and I think it should be something that we need to seriously look at.
I would note that the language that's in the ordinance uses the definitions that city council has already adopted for texting while operating a motor vehicle. We define both wireless communication device, and we also define electronic messages. So your increased blood pressure or heart rate there, Mr. Bunker, would not constitute sending a electronic message.
So we have make a motion?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Bunker's made a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. That being said, council, have any questions on this?
You're also changing clerk secretary with some other wording, administrator.
Yes. Well, Mr. Bunker brought this forward for a change in the norms of operation. I took the opportunity to do housekeeping. At the time that this section of the city code was adopted, the city did not have a position of city administrator. It also has some of the more arcane language of city clerk, which is now commonly referred to as the city secretary. And so in going through this, I have divided those two things out. It does not change the function or substance. As you're aware at this point, I am the city clerk, I am the city secretary, and I am the city administrator. So it doesn't change anything, but should in the future, those be two separate positions, it has been separated as they would commonly be done in any other city, where the administrator has administrator duties and the secretary has secretary duties.
Thank you. All there's a motion on the floor. Do any other council members wish to speak on this action? If none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those against?
Nancy.
Aye. Richard, you're against? Mm-hmm. And Nancy's against? Okay. The ayes have it. Move on to
Mayor, Commissioner, I would like to have my right to explain my opposing position, please.
You have a right to do that. Go ahead, Councilman Snell.
I do believe that it is too vague of language. I believe it's going to be hard to enforce. I just can give an example that a couple of months ago, my phone was ringing on silent, and it was Tommy got a flat tire, so I just hit the I'm in a meeting thing to shut him down. Well, technically, that's an electronic transfer, so then I'm in violation. I also use my phone to look up code because, as things discussed, I can go to Texas Election Code, I can go to Texas Government Code. I can go back to emails that I've had, you know, with correspondence with the city administrator. I can also send myself an email reminder, because sometimes writing it down, it just doesn't get there. But if I send an email, I'll remember. So therefore, by continuing that practice, which is due diligence, I will be in violation. So that's why I'm opposed to this. Thank you.
Like that. Alderman Snow. Alderman Snow. Mayor Pro Tem, Helps, you want to say that?
There was a situation when I think my mother was in the hospital, and I really was wanting to get updates during the council meeting, and I typically would wait for a gap between agenda items to respond quickly, you know, good news, bad news, whatever. And so I just want to have that opportunity if an emergency comes up, and that's why I voted no.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor.
Since I seconded the motion,
yes, sir.
I'd like an opportunity to reflect upon this.
Yes, sir.
Item.
Go right ahead.
I think in either case of the examples that were presented, I don't see any issue that the mayor and the council members, remaining council members, would have any problems if the council member excused themselves from the dais.
Quite a privilege, that's correct, sir.
And I think that's probably the mechanism that's most common sense that's available to all of us. I don't think the language is vague, and that says shall not use the device to send the messages during the council meeting. It doesn't say anything about receiving them. And clearly, if the council member excuses themselves, seeks the mayor's exceptions of that, that process goes along pretty reasonably. I think I understand Mr. Bumper's intent that there's the possibility of members of the council with these electronic devices on during the meeting, that there's a temptation to deflect their attention to their electronic device for things which are not emergencies. And I think Mr. Bunker took the most moderate approach to this with what seems to be fairly crystal clear language, at least to me. And I like to say that I do professionally have had considerable experience writing regulations as a professional, and also being involved with writing legislation professionally. So I think some people may be overreacting to what seems to be a very clear representation. Now, again, having been a professional regulation writer and occasional statute writer, I realize that the page has more white on it than black, and if one wants to read what they will in the white on the page, there's no way of stopping people from exaggerating what's not there.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. I'm going to move on to item 8.4, review of city policies, rules, regulations, and state statutes related to placement of political signs. This will be Mr. Moyer speaking on this, but before he speaks, I want to let everyone know we have Mr. Giles, the city attorney, sitting here tonight. I asked him to be present tonight to answer a few questions for the city to show where we stand on a few issues that came up with political signs. He'll speak after Mr. Moyer, though. Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I requested that this be put on the agenda largely because, through no fault of my own and seemingly inadvertently, I got caught in the middle of the activities last Thursday while I was sitting waiting in the city offices. And it just seemed like an extraordinary confrontation was being created over the city's requirements, which if every council candidate declared their intent to be a candidate by filing, that presumably if there were any issues, those could have been brought to the attention of the city council when a particular candidate filed to run for office. That clearly didn't happen during that couple of month period. And as I said, I was sort of a witness to some of the initial contentiousness that related to this. these policies, and so I thought it would be worthwhile if this be put on the agenda for no other reason than to reiterate how the city's requirements are there, how they've been there for a while, and that they treat all candidates and potential candidates equally, if not always to the candidate's satisfaction. Nobody's freedom of speech is challenged in any fashion than any other candidate. So it's sort of an equal opportunity series of requirements that do not disadvantage one candidate or another, arguably, or stifle speech of that candidate. So that was the motivation to be putting this on the agenda, so that there could be some public airing that these requirements have existed. They do exist. They apply to all candidates. They don't discriminate against any particular candidate, unless that particular candidate chooses to discriminate by ignoring the city's requirements. Like I said, I thought it was unfortunate that in the 5 days subsequent to last Thursday, all kinds of seemingly odd behavior, which didn't reflect, at least in my mind, any common sense or integrity. In any case, that was my motivation, and that's why it's here on the agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Mr. Giles, the city basically has a directive, my understanding, not per se an ordinance on the signs. For the city, for the citizens that don't know about this, that had questions, and just give us the legal rights, where you stand for as a city attorney for us, what our rights are as a city versus candidates and things, please. Can you help us, give us a little foreground?
Sure, as I understand the allegation is, there's an allegation that's a violation of the First Amendment.
Correct.
For the city to remove campaign signs from the city's property. And the Supreme Court dealt with that issue because 35 years ago, a council member, a council candidate in Los Angeles made that same argument. And in 1984, the Supreme Court of the United States made it very clear that the law of land is that the city has the right to police its own property and to remove campaign signs and any other signs from the city's property. So the city is entitled to clean up its own property, remove signs from its property, and there's no exposure to the city for a civil rights suit for that, doing that activity.
So my understanding that, per se, directive or policy that the city has, although I put a hold on everything to try to figure everything out, my understanding is that the city is within the rights not to have campaign signs on city property before the first day early voting.
Yeah, you don't have to have an ordinance. You don't have to have a resolution. The city's entitled to police its own property. The city can remove the signs from its own property, any sign, including campaign signs, and it does not subject the city to liability.
We're not infringing on First Amendment rights.
No.
Okay. I'll start down. Any council members have a question for our attorney?
I just have a question as that pertains to Texas Election Code Chapter 61.003, which does specifically put restrictions on municipalities and what they can and cannot govern as far as political signs and political, we'll just call it free speech as it were. It states the 100 feet from the place, and then it also defines the voting period. And according to Texas Municipal League, when I called them on the 21st, when I asked them, can I put a sign 100 feet away because early voting starts Monday, which would be today, and this was last Tuesday, and the lady, her name was Sarah, and she was a sweetheart, and she said, I can't find any reason why you can't because it's defined as a voting period, and that begins the first day you can legally cast a vote. So the city's has an ordinance that says, or a policy, 7 days prior to the election. Well, the election began today. Otherwise, the people that showed up today, do their votes not count? Because that is actually the beginning of the election period as defined by Chapter 61.003 of the Texas Election Code. And that's what I got from TML.
Okay, and of course, you have about 20 comments in that question, so I can't really respond to all the comments. The question I was asked is there a civil rights violation, a First Amendment violation by the city removing signs from the city property? The answer to that question is no. Now, as far as the election provision that you're talking about, I don't know, that's not an issue as far as I'm concerned with what's come up here. And so I can't really speak to that. But I also can't, I'm not sure who you ask at TML for a legal opinion about anything, and even if that person was a lawyer. Do you know, what's the name of the person?
Her name was Sarah. She was in the legal department, and I spoke with her on the, oh, let me use my device, on the 21st at 2:32 that afternoon. And so I did contact. She said, as long as it's not in the 100 feet, you're good to go.
Okay, well, I can't say that that's a... Well, first of all, I know most of the lawyers of TML, and I don't know one named Sarah.
Okay.
So I don't really know if you're talking to a lawyer or you're talking to somebody in there.
I always verify that they are an attorney. I don't want to talk to a paralegal. I usually try to talk to God, not Jesus or disciples.
Well, that's nice. I understand. Maybe she is. Maybe I don't know her.
Okay.
But, again, I think that even the way you explained your response is not that she really did any research. She was just like... talking to you off the top of her head as she doesn't know.
I was on the phone with her for over 45 minutes as she was researching. Okay. So I beg to differ.
Okay, well, I don't know. I wasn't there, and I wasn't listening to her either, so.
Okay, well, I just wanted to see if there was any, if your legal opinion as the city attorney, if you find any discrepancy where Chapter 61 is inapplicable to our city all of a sudden.
Well, certainly the statute's not inapplicable, but this Supreme Court decision is also applicable. And it would control any statutes.
So even if the candidates are following the guidelines, there's signs out there now which are clearly within what the city code says. The city could still just sit there and go pluck them just because they're clean and how?
The city can remove the sign that's on the city's property.
Okay.
More?
Well, I spoke my piece. However, when the rest of the council members are finished with their comments, or Mr. Mayor, I appreciate if you could return to me.
Please. Mr. Bunker.
Yeah, I just have a couple. I mean, the Supreme Court, right?
Right.
The Supreme Court.
Right.
Little bitty tiny Shore Acres, and we're talking about signs, but. 2 years ago when I ran, I was chastised for not having paid for by a bunker ad campaign or something. And that was in the policies, the same policies that now people are wanting to disobey. I had to obey a couple of years ago. So I guess I don't understand how people want it both ways. The Supreme Court says they can do it. Our policy says not to do it until today. Then I don't get it. I don't know why we're even having the discussion.
No, I don't have any comment.
Mr.
Mayor,
yes, sir. I would like to comment the policy statement that's in your packet. The issue was raised by legal counsel for one of the candidates about the section 61003. In the election code, which is on the following page, and it talks about public buildings or properties under control of the cities. And my recollection when that came up a couple of years ago was where there was a civic center, and the poll was in the civic center, and the civic center as an operation didn't want political signs on the property outside the 100 foot, and they made this modification. And you can see from the timing, it's about the time of the original policy. So on April 21st, 2015, the policy that's in your packet was slightly modified to change the 7 days before the election, which is what it had been for a number of years, to from the first day of early voting through election day. And that change was made to accommodate the section 61003. But the allegations and claims against the city that caused us to be here tonight were before today and were well outside of any of the requirements of 61003.
Second, Commissioner Stahl. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Unless other council members have anything they wish to add. My sense is that the city's requirements are not, as I said earlier, not discriminatory. And there's a certain amount of frustration, I think, with many in the community that the city garden looks like some of the other poles do when a tremendous amount of signs put out for single candidates and whatever, which seems to me to be a little excessive. So if you will indulge me a little, I'd like to make a motion that it be the sense of this council that during this election period, that the candidates who are running for city council this session, that they voluntarily limit themselves to a single sign on the city property. It just seems to me that that's reasonable consideration to the rest of the community who shares the city's property and should not have to put up with, I guess, what I'll call the nuisance value of having a flurry of signs out there when one per candidate on a voluntary basis would seem to be a very reasonable concession by all the candidates. That's my motion.
I respect that. I don't think I could take a motion on that, however. I think that would put us within a legal aspect to infringing on someone's rights, as much as I respect that. If it was on the agenda and that way, it would be one thing, but to make a motion on that, I think it was our city council there would put me infringing someone's rights. Now, if they want to voluntarily do it, he's asking to be one way. But I think... unfortunately could not do that at this time.
That's fine. I've expressed my point, and I would hope that all the candidates would consider and do the right thing from a common sense point of view and from an integrity point of view and voluntarily limit themselves.
Duly noted, sir. Thank you. Move on to item 8.5. Mr. Giles, we appreciate you coming in tonight, sir. You're really welcome to leave. I know you have other pressing issues today. Thank you very much. We really appreciate you coming in. 8.5, consideration approval of 2015 consumer price index adjustment to municipal telecommunications right-of-way access line and rates. Mr. Stahl.
I know you've all heard this before, but I have to say it again. A number of years ago, the PUC changed the way in which the city participates in the franchise fees for use of the city's rights-of-way and street crossings. It no longer do we get a franchise fee that is a percentage of the cost of telephone service. Instead, we get a per line by type of user fee. That being the case, the city does not get the inflationary value adjustments as price of things go up, and therefore our fees would go up. And so the PUC has created this formula by which they use a consumer price index adjustment, and they produced the document that's in your packet, and you will see what our current rates are and the adjusted rates. On the back it says Section 1, 2014 City Preferred Rates. Those are the rates that are currently collected on the city's behalf on telephone bills. These are landlines. These are not cell phones. This is all hardwire telephone service. I believe it also applies to the voice over internet, so it just is not the cell phone. The residential rate is 84 cents per month. And they call it default rate. The assumption of the PUC is that the city will avail itself of the cost index. If you take no action, it automatically will go into effect. But tonight is your opportunity to turn down or to take a number that's less than. The forms used to have a blank where you could pick a number between the proposed rate, what the automatic rate would be, and the existing rate. Apparently, there aren't any jurisdictions that ever filled the blank in. They either took the index rate or left it the same. You kind of work yourself into a hole if you don't take it, because your future adjustments based on what your prior was. And you can see that this would increase the residential cost on telephone service by 1 penny per month or 12 cents a year. So that's a rather modest increase. The non-residential or commercial increases by 24 cents a year. And then the point-to-point, which is a lease line, which is a commercial service that's used to do remote controls and various functions, you might think of telemetry, that goes up 36 cents a year on what is currently $2.82 goes to $2.85. Expressed as a percentage, that is a very small number. My recommendation is that council accept the CPI inflation adjustment, and we'll send the form in saying that we'll accept it. Then that's well.
Question?
Yes.
So how does the city recoup or get this monies from?
The Public Utility Commission will notify all of the carriers. Much like electric, telephone has been deregulated, and so you can get your telephone service in Shore Acres from dozens of providers. Everything from the Texas Farm Bureau to, you know, your AT&T.
So on your bill, I guess this is one of those taxes or fees that...
Correct.
Okay.
It will appear on there as a municipal tax. It is a franchise fee.
And the PUC will do the calculations. And
the PUC will tell them what the new line rate is. They will calculate, each of the carriers will calculate how many of each of those lines that they have into our jurisdiction, and then quarterly they submit that payment. And some of those quarterly payments are a dollar. Some of the quarterly payments are significantly more.
I'll entertain a motion. We can ask questions after.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That was a point of order. Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to approve the CPI adjustment for 2015.
Sorry, Mr. Snow, Mr. Willett. Okay, now I ask, is there any questions?
Sorry.
That's all right, Mike. We'll let you go. I have that privilege. Yes. Anyone else? Any questions? All right. No questions being asked. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? The ayes have it. That being said, I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 8:03.